Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. All right, everybody, it's a brand new week. Thank God for another day of being here, another week to start, whether we complain or not. We are here. All right, first, got to give a couple of very special shout-outs for their birthdays to my firstborn son, Mr. Stanley out there, Mr. Stizzy Stacks, on Facebook. Happy 22nd birthday, my boy. And to our own Professor Carlton Jones, happy birthday, happy birthday, and happy birthday. So I'm happy for all you guys making it for another year greatness. To Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 Kiss FM Radio, currently with isoradio.com. You can hear Barry do his thing on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m. and on Sundays, 6 to 10 p.m. And look for Barry all over the venues in New York City with, as the CEO of Track One Entertainment, bringing you the best of live R&B events. To my sponsor tonight and the birthday boys, Professor Carlton Jones and the What About Us group, thank you very much for you sponsoring us, picking up from where the great Mark Pittman left off. Thank you guys for your endless support. To my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Yeves, Feel Better Babe. To Monster Miles, come back soon, DJ Domer, Galatney Williams, and of course, our active panelists and active resident in Toledo, Ohio, Deacon Betty Williams. Thank you all for having the girls back all the time. Social media groups, my On the Edge listeners lounge, you guys have been hot. To the Urban Intellectuals Open Discussions group with Patrick Irvine, you guys have been the bomb. Thank you very much. What About Us and Professor Carlton Jones. Mark Pittman with the Black Love and Black History Suppressed and the Real World Black News and Discussions group. Linda Miller, the Black Love and Conversations group. Marvin Young, the Capitalist N group. And to everybody else that I missed out there, because I'm getting a little old, just know that I appreciate all that you do. My starting panelists, Professor Carlton Jones, Al Tariq Atkins, our new machine gun, Stalo Jenkins, and Patrick Irvine, Erica Talbert, Darlene and Arlene, you guys make the discussions the bomb all the time. So thank you all very much. All right, part three and the conclusion of our series, Racism, Peekaboo, I see you not. Tonight we're going to be speaking about solutions and advancements. I asked all of you three questions, a two-part three question, actually. A, what do you think in the black community are three of the top priorities we must address immediately to start our progress journey? And what three types of mindsets do you think we need to change in order for us to get to those priorities? So that's the question on the table tonight. Going out with a classic from the Commodores, Brick House. We will be back after the Commodores and a word from our sponsors. Keep it locked with Katie. Don't go anywhere.
Nothing back. Oh, she's a brick.
New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, attorneys at law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Before we get into our discussion for the evening, there was a special announcement that I had to make before I forget it. Tomorrow night, everyone, we're going to have a special broadcast at a special time. It's going to be at 8:30 p.m. We're going to be featuring five young students from PS 37 Cynthia Jenkins School in Queens, New York, who have, oh, my God, they made the most amazing presentation in an award ceremony this past Friday about anti-bullying. All of these students were chosen for their outstanding writing pieces on bullying, and four out of five of those children had experienced bullying and had to write about it. And what came out of this was an amazing, amazing piece, all of these people. And in compliance with our Tuesday's Writer Showcase segment, they will be here, and I am asking all of you that listen in to come out and support these children. If you have teens or children that have been bullied, these children will be allowed to speak to these other children, and maybe everybody can co-support and network with each other, and parents can get together, and their teacher, Ms. Jewel Mitchell, an amazing fourth grade teacher, will be here to tell you all why is it that she helped help these children vote for this theme for their end-of-year, you know, theme. So I really encourage all of you, and I really request that all of you be here to help support these children. It's in an African-American community in a school where so much is happening. This is the one school out of many that have avoided closures, that have avoided losing their arts, and these are people that you can really find that care. Now, you know, you always have a few bad apples, but overall, these teachers really care about these students far beyond curriculum or any numbers that's out there. So tomorrow night at 8:30, it will not be 10:30, so please do not call in at 10:30. It will be scheduled for 8:30 to 10:30 for these young kids to be able to be there and get to bed at a reasonable hour. All right, racism, peekaboo, I see you not, part three, solutions and advancement. This is what we're going to speak about today. So I asked the question, what are the three priority issues that we need to address as an African-American community right now, okay, in order for us to begin healing, mending, repairing, restoring, rejuvenating. I also asked that in, on the other hand of that, what are the three mindsets that we as a people have to break ourselves out of in order for us to accomplish those three priorities? So let me bring in my opinion. And I see all of my panelists are lit up and ready to go. So you guys, they'll be right with you all. My top three, my first one, I believe there's two and one. So I'm going to put them both down as one. I believe legal systems, laws, and finances, okay? We need to have a system that will be able to put color out of the justice system when it comes down to our people and criminal offenses or misdemeanor offenses or nonviolent offenses. We really need to have our own people do that. Equally so, we need finances in order for that to be something that we can actually put in place. Now, finances, I don't mean just cold, hard cash, because that's the first thing that we seem to jump on. I mean, we need to really make finances flow without dependencies on other people. Now, it's going to take a minute, but if we make it steady, those minutes can go pretty quick. Internal networking, as we alluded to previously on the little private money pools that we used to get together, some of it's called SUSU, and Spanish is Asociedad. It's a few things where every week a few of us come from our jobs, take out a little bit of our paycheck, put it into a pool. One person each week gets the money from a trusted bank or a trusted third party. We need, in other words, to bring up our finances, make better purchasing choices. Choices of where we purchase things is not something that is government bound. It's not ruled by any kind of entity. It is your own mind and your own choices and your own free will. We do so have that, ladies and gentlemen. And with these purchasing choices, we need to start buying back into our own communities just the way all other ethnic groups do. So that when we start building our own finances, our own banking institutions, our own psychological institutions, so that we can have our own people in there to help us heal from our psychological traumas, from things that we've gone through, we can do this for ourselves and we don't have to depend on other people. My second is definitely our educational system. We need to be able to choose our schools, our educators, and our curriculum. That I put second because right belief, legal, and financial, this is where schooling comes in. But what can we do about that right now? Attend your PTA meetings. Attend your SLT meetings. Attend the district council meetings. Go up to the school and have regular pop-up visits on your child. No educational law in the world can ban a parent from coming to pop-up on their child. Observe your children. If you're not a working person in the day, or you don't work, you're at home, mom or dad, pop up during your school lunch hour for your child. See what happens in the schoolyard. See how the aides handle your children, handle conflict. These are things that you can observe, take notes, and go fight. And finally on my list is real estate, because after we do all of this, we're going to need a place to set up all of these things. Now, with that being said, here's the mindsets that I believe we need to get rid of or really quickly alter. Being a conformist, conforming to what they want, conforming to what it is that they will allow us to do in order to give us the slightest bit of tidbits, carrots on a stick, pieces of scraps from their table, proverbially, and otherwise. We need to get out of the habit of believing that we are not worth something, that we aren't as great as we really are. We need to get to the point of understanding that we have to come to our own worth so that we don't settle for anything less than what we're worth. We need to get out of the contentment phase and the submissive phase. It is what it is. I'm happy with what I have. They're not taking us anything from me. When I go out to my car every day, my car is still there. They're not taking away my daily situation, so why is that a problem? You guys should be happy. We didn't have this before. And the deflective and digressive attitude. Deflective, meaning we spoke about this, I don't know, for a week straight. Deflecting from the elephant in the room, the monster in the community, racism. particularly racism against the African Americans, because regardless of whatever else goes on against other groups, regardless of whatever epithets are being called by dominant America, the Kikes have reparations and communities and internal rejuvenation and support networks. The Wetbacks have working groups, have work, is offered things. Even if it's day labor, they get something. They get trade. They get import and export privileges. They look a little better, a little more acceptable, even though they're a bit darker than the average. So, but they have straight hair and small features. So we could kind of let them pass. The Chinks, they have import, export, outsourced of our jobs. They have electronics. They have everything that has been dried up in America, period, allowing them to flourish. And then we die. I know I see it. I know my son was just hit. I know that he was. But guess what? I don't want to mess with that. That something might happen to me. They might take away my little bit. We need to get started and start thinking differently. We need to know what we know, expect what we're going to expect, and do it anyway. There's too many of us for them to get rid of everyone at once. And so by the time they're working on the East, maybe some of us in the West can start building something up. Let's talk about what they can do better. Stop pretending that they're not racist. Stop pretending that racism if they don't exist. And I'm going to allude to my favorite saying. If you are a person that is not of color and you are not a person who is afraid to go out there and speak up and speak out against the horrible things that's being committed from your end of the world, then this doesn't apply to you. Sit in, join the fight. Maybe you can put in a couple of extra inside tips, and maybe we can all make a better, harmonious world. And to those of you on my side of the fence that are out there not just being social media activists, but you're out there being community activists, this doesn't apply to you either. Now, the rest of you in the middle of all that, that's taking offense to anything that's being said, that's going to call in and try to do whatever, clearly, you're one of the people that needs work. Let's bring in our panelists for the day, and we will get this discussion on the road. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air. Hello?
Hey, Katie. I'm sorry. I muted the phone.
All right, birthday boy.
Hi. I'm still out here on the porch. This is Professor Carl Tone Jones calling in from Philly.
All right. There's two more people behind you, Professor. You'll be first up on the mic. Hang on just a sec. Welcome to the show,
Chloe.
You're on the air.
Blessings to all, and a joyful and blessing happy birthday to you, Professor.
Oh, thank you, Deacon. I appreciate that much, Russ. Thank you.
Yes,
all right,
yes,
welcome.
Yes.
One more to go. Welcome to the show, Chloe. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Carlos Alibi Jones or Stalo Jenkins calling from D.C.
All right,
Stalo.
Hey, everybody. Happy birthday to you, and happy birthday.
Where's the machine gun? Missing him. We're missing our artillery tonight. Where is he at?
Well, he'll be in.
All right, Professor. You first up. Three things that you feel our community needs to address right this minute, and three mindsets you think we need to shed so that we can get this moving.
Okay. One of the immediate need, I think, is gentrification. You know, we need to stop gentrification in our communities, because what's happening is we're going to be shipped out of the communities into a third world like setting if we don't pay attention to what's happening around us. You know, I keep referring back to South African apartheid when it talks about our conditions and so forth, and it's not even happening slowly but surely. Very quickly, we are being moved and uprooted. We are being moved and uprooted out of our neighborhoods and placed in places that you know, we're far away from any resources. We're far away from the economic centers and so forth. And we're disorganized because now we have to start all over in terms of having the opportunity to rebuild the community. Number two is we have to focus on dealing with the youth and getting them, teaching them about self, basically getting them to develop a self-love and to show them their part in this revolution or this liberation. I keep calling it a revolution, but it's more so of a liberation at this point, you know, because we need to liberate ourselves from the constructs of the system that's oppressing us. And I know that's a lot in a little bit, but in a nutshell, we need to be liberated individually. And I'll give you an example. You know, I was at a training a couple days ago, and there were two sisters sitting right next to me, and they were complaining about the pay at the training. And one sister was complaining, saying that she didn't receive that people aren't communicating because they're not connected, so that they believe that they need to have these meetings so they can bump up and get higher pay. I suggested to them, I said, why don't y'all just learn what y'all need to learn about this operation and start your own business? Now, the younger sister was down, but the older sister, as soon as I put that responsibility and onus on her to take control of her own destiny, started clamming up. And, you know, remember, the whole conversation started about money, about how she didn't have enough money. Now, all of a sudden, well, it ain't always about money when you got to deal with all the overhead, the headache that comes with it. And I'm saying to myself, see, you just talk yourself out of doing something for yourself because you're not liberated. You know, mentally, spiritually, you're not liberated from white supremacy. So you feel as though you still need to work up under them to get as far as you can. And that's part of the problem is too many of us don't feel liberated enough to step out on the branch and do our own thing. Now, the third part, and Katie, you touched on it, is group economics. We need to start practicing group economics so little by little we can start taking back the community and whole, and we can start holding people accountable for the way they treat us. Prime example, in the gay and lesbian community, if you do something to one of them, they'll shut your whole state down. Mm-hmm. As evidenced by, you know, what happened when they were about to pass that law down in Arizona, you know, about where they were about to veto the law for same-sex marriages and all that. And when those people started talking and they shut down like three conferences out there, three major conferences down there, then, you know, next thing you know, that law got overturned. You know, that governor decided not to veto that law. See, we need to have some type of stance like that. You know, and I understand that, you know, in terms of full liberation from this country and government, that's pretty far off. But I think those are the things we need to focus on, because if you become an economic powerhouse and you start causing these devils money, then what happens is when you start causing them money, they start listening and coming to you. And not only that, those of us that work for them all will start to come to us to pander our attention, and then we can put them in their place and make them do the things they're supposed to do for us politically.
Right, absolutely. Mindsets.
The mindset we need to develop is we need to think race first. You know, we need to think race first, and we need to move in a direction. I mean, race first is number one. Number two, we need to move into a direction where we abandon our dependence on white supremacy. We need to be able to we need to separate ourselves from those of us who feel the need to pander to white supremacy. I think we need to, and what I mean by that is those of us who feel as though that there was an article the other day, my brother was telling me last night as I was on his show here in Philadelphia, that there was an article he read where there's a group of black people that are just tired of talking about the civil rights movement. They're just tired of it. They want to move on. You know, those are the types of people that we need to start to distance ourselves from and then re-educate them before we allow them back in on this liberation movement. The third thing that we need to do, we need to start acting like men and women. You know, as men and women, we need to man up. It's time for us to put the toys and trinkets behind. It's time for us to put the games, and being overly sexualized behind. Let's face it, most men, have we reached our sexual peak in our teens. So what are we still out here chasing the tail for? You know, and for the sisters, you know, you got to, you know, up your standards a little bit and let people know that you can't just be selling yourself out there as a piece of meat because, you know, it's a question of supply and demand. If you're supplying the market, you know, trying to meet the demand, then there's always going to be somebody coming out there for you for that particular package. But if you try to stimulate somebody, you know, with more appeal than just sexual appeal, if you try to stimulate somebody with just being the essence, you know, black women are the most beautiful creature that God has ever created. And you don't need to strip down to your, dental floss, panties, and things of that nature for anybody to see it. So we need to start actualizing and getting our mental state to the point where we can address situations as men and women so we stop acting like little boys and girls hanging outside the store waiting for the new Jordans to come out.
Absolutely. And that's on both male and women's side in our situation. I believe when we were speaking earlier on the other show, one of the things that we tend to do often is we tend to give up what we have considered or deemed comforts, and comforts based on what we feel they've given us. And you've touched on that quite a bit, Professor. We are too busy being worried about giving up little things that get upgraded every week, that you spend all this money and you got to spend more money again. We're too busy worried about the entertainment aspect of things, too afraid to give up what might be blinging on our arms, too afraid to give up what we consider status and privilege in the world. And we're too busy, once we get to that little bit of the first avenue in this whole big mountaintop dream, forgetting the fact that after we step out of the threshold of the bad side, we're supposed to get there and make that better because more people like them are coming up. I'm going to touch back on that in a minute. Let me bring our other panelists in and go to Deacon Aim in a minute. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air. Hello? I think that's our machine gun. He ain't saying anything. Welcome to the show. Okay. Deacon, go ahead.
Well, I totally agree with everything that Professor had to say. And he basically took a whole lot of right out of my mouth. So, to start off at one is that we need to start clearing up the cracks that we have in our own foundation as a people. And we have a lot of those cracks, and they have accumulated over the years, and it's not going to happen overnight. As far as being a guarded race of people right now, because they don't even trust their own people half the time. Once we have to work on some things within ourselves in order for things to start coming back to life, because right now our foundation is so cracked up, it's almost like crumbling in your hands. So there's some things that we have to work together on as a people. First of all, because we have been so long in a rut to where we have been programmed to just sitting back and accepting certain things from the outside world, like we're talking about white supremacy. Let's put it out there for what it is. And start standing up on our own, and that's not what we're doing. There was a point in time that we had showed strength and unity in some parts, but now it seems like we're falling and being drawn further and further away from it, and that definitely needs to change.
Absolutely. So your three things would be to address right now would be what?
Well, as far as us being seeming like we're dependent on other people. I mean, we can't keep sitting back and keep always complaining about what's not happening because we're not making it happen. That's just
Absolutely.
A simple fact. We're not making it happen. I mean, you can sit around and run your mouth all day, but if you're not making any motions on yourself to get this well-oiled machine put together, then what's the sense of wasting time and even talking about it if you're not going to take any action?
Funny you should say that, because when we had our last visitor here, and Professor, I remember you made sure you specified repeat in that portion, was when Joe said, let's face it, white people don't like black people. Now, like I speak and I say often to those that this doesn't apply to, don't wear the shoes. But it's like, what are we waiting for? You know, like, what is it that what we are waiting for us to get it, for us to understand? Like you said, Professor, gentrification, they're buying up all the dilapidated buildings that, you know, we've been conditioned to use as either piss trays, or we got to sit in the corner and do something, hide out from a cop or do whatever the case is. We've got to get out of that. And, Stayla, I'm going to go right to you in just a minute. The finances situation, I believe, needs to stop, because the welfare welfare culture, okay, brings everything about you as a person, the essence about you for a black American, okay, is horrible. Let's just bring up a couple of specifics, because I'm sure that anybody listening in that is forced at this moment to use that as a means of support understands exactly what I'm talking about. They give you this little electronic card. This is where you get your food and cash benefits. Now, you got to go through about 50 million hoops just to get through the application process. The application process, even in an emergency situation, it still takes 2 weeks or so before you can get anything. So if you're hungry going in, you better have something to eat. Okay? If you are lost in any type of financial whatever, you're going to be stuck in there and until they finish their process. Next up, you have to get fingerprinted. Get fingerprinted for what? You're going to ask for benefits, not to get a government job. So there's another thing. Then after that, Lord knows that EBT card is your life and your house arrest bracelet. Because should you lose it, if you should lose your card, you know you can call a credit card company and say, I lost my card. They'll stop it. Then they'll send you one. No. Here, if you want to get it, they will make you go down to your local center. Now, if there are 5 boroughs in one place, if you are in Manhattan, and I'm just speaking on the New York side right now, if your center is in Manhattan and you have lost your card, you have to go to your center just to get a number, just to sit there and wait for them to bring you to the window to officially put in the system that your card was lost or stolen. Then you got to take a paper and go down to another center, which could be on a train ride an hour long, all right? Could on a bus ride, it could be an hour and 45 minutes long, just to sit there for 10 minutes to call your name to pick up your card. So you carry that card around like it's a crack pipe and you're an addict. Okay, so that's one. Two, every little time that no matter what it is, now they want you not to be on it, but whatever you are doing on the outside world to comply with that aspect of everything, they feel they can just stop you from work, they can stop you from a doctor's appointment, they can stop you from anything because they need you to have a mandatory something. And if you don't make it, they can close your case. And there you go. Now, and Lord knows, depending on what type of rental assistance you have, if certain ones are like this. If we close your case, the minute that goes into the computer, it doesn't matter if they didn't officially close it, you've got to fix it or whatever. Once the rental side of that gets your that message, your rent is gone. Then if you have a certain composition size in your family household, okay, they claim to budget you out for what is adequately appropriate for the amount of people you have in your house. Now, giving you an example of one person's case, 8 people on the budget, $60 every 2 weeks in cash is what they're getting. Now, with that, you're supposed to fill in the part when your food stamps run out, and you're supposed to have car fare for any child that needs to be paid for in a fare, and you got to buy clothes, and you got to pay whatever bills they don't pay, and you have to make sure that you still have money left over to the next 2 weeks after. So now, dividing 60 by 8 people, you don't even get $8 a person. And they will, if they are taking a portion out because they're going to pay bills for you, each time they pay it, they take money out of that 60. Even though you sign an agreement to get a specific part of your budget taken out so that they can pay the bill and you don't have to worry about it. At least that's what they said. Now the rules are changing. Then they say they're going to give you a way to get back to work and get back on your feet. And the only thing they're offering you, all right, well, the way it works out here is 35 hours of activity, mandatory. So they send you, if you're not going to school, you don't have a job of your own, they send you to a class that's supposed to help you learn resume skills, job skills, how to dress, interviewing skills, and they help you find jobs, right? They don't have any jobs that actually match your skills. You have to be a food worker, a maintenance worker, or a hospital person. If you're a writer, you could forget about it because they don't really look into places like that to have those type of jobs. Oh, they do have computers, so let me just say that. But the classes are from 9 to 5, 5 days a week, so that's 40 hours, right? Now, explain to me, if you're going there because you have a part-time job that only gives you 20 hours, technically you're only supposed to go for 3-5-hour classes. Yet if you miss the last 2 days of the week, which in actuality, by any other labor standards, you'd be working overtime every week. But if you don't go, they call you in and threaten to take your stuff out. So I brought all that up to say, why in the hell don't any of us sit there and say, this is too much?
Mm-hmm.
The questionnaire to get an application is 59 questions long. Most of them are repeat questions, but they want to see how you answer it. They ask you if you got a car. They ask you if you have a home. They ask you if you have all these things, and even ask you how much money is in your pocket right now. The minute your child turns 18, they're considered an adult, so you have to sit there and have them come down and sign for themselves. However, they're still under your care to a point if they're in school. But they can do something as an adult on the case that would jeopardize the entire family. So there goes rebellious teens. Stalo, you're up, right? Let me try to bring this panelist in again. Hang on. Welcome to the show, Callie. You're on the air. Okay. Guess not. All right. That's it. We'll start here.
I think your question was, what are our three top priorities, right? And yes. I think that those, you know, what we need to hold dear is our children, our bodies, you know, and just the love for one another. Okay, these are the three components we need. Just this is our children first, you know, and some type of code by which to live, for which to, you know, which you intake, because there's a lot of things that they're putting out here as poisons. So we need to learn how to defend our children. And learn how to defend them, we're going to learn how to feed them. Now, not how it's always been done necessarily, but really, actually, how it's been done in the past, not how it's been done now. We need to learn how to feed them in this time where food is really, really, really poison. The culture, the anti-culture, because it's not really culture, because it's not begetting anything good. So it can't be culture. The anti-culture is having, you know, children at, you know, age 10, 180 pounds, stuff like that is happening, okay? It's you know, if you look at the stats online and stuff like that, it's really, really bad. And this thing, these things exist, you know. And what we need to change, though, is you were dead on when you said mindsets. There are definitely mindsets that we need to change. You know, one of those mindsets, I think, well, was already brought up. If we have a defeated mindset or a defeatedness and you know, a fearfulness, we need to get rid of that. There's nothing to fear. Okay, I was on the bus today, and I almost went to blows with an older gentleman who wanted to fight with me because I told him, there was, you know, and I say this often, more black men in college than in jail. It's true. And because he didn't believe it, he was ready to fight me. He had his man, he was a construction worker. And he was like, man, he said, have you been to jail? He started asking all the black men on the bus, did they go to jail? And it was so ridiculous, and he was ready. And I was like, wow, you ready to fight me because I'm telling you the truth. So I defeated mindset. There's a lot of defeated of us, you know, and a lot of us, because they feel defeated, they won't go back black first. And that's the other mindset we need to change. White first has to change. It's not true. No, you know, and that's a materialism and economics, like somebody had already said. Black first, buy. Economically, we need to think black first and teach our children the same. We need to stop being so shy of being who we are. How can we protect little, you know, whatever name you want to insert. If it's your child, it is. You know, we are one people, you know. You know, there's no, you know, we need to change the materialism also in the way we think of things in certain ways. Like, there's no culture of poverty, right? Inherently, poverty would be an anti-culture. You know, it doesn't beget anything or promote anything fruitful. So that's a racist creation. When you look at the social society, the societal engineers, they created something that was pushed, called the culture of poverty. They are racist creation, all right? They vilified, right? And they created that stereotype, right? And in creating the stereotype, more people started to do it. It started to be something that was like kind of encouraged, yet it was sought after. Beforehand, okay, the so-called mother or who is abusing welfare and doing this and doing that, that didn't exist for real. There was people that was actually using and doing things that was uplifting them. Now, they had to vilify the character of that person so as to keep them from doing too much. So what they did was create for you a stereotype saying that this black mother, you know, or black family is abusing the system and is giving all of this so-called opportunity for so-called this and so-called that. This is some Fred Hampton crap. I'm about to put it to you for a minute. Hold on. Because what we need to understand is things like, for instance, free lunch and breakfast at schools, free lunch and breakfast at programs, da-da-da-da-da, woo-woo-woo, programs, period. This was created in the 70s by the Black Panther Party. They used government funds also, right? But Fred Hampton was shot down in his bedroom for doing it. See, it was different then. Now they have complete control over the system at hand, like black, white people, you know what I'm saying, the government. But at that time, it was brand new to think of such a thing. Give children free food in a neighborhood that's not savvy to their environment, to their growth. That didn't make sense back then. They created such a thing. Now we deal with such a thing as if it's just easy, okay? But we should appreciate it. It's here because they put it in place. Now, you know, but he shot dead in his house at age 21 for it. And guess what? See, peekaboo racism. See, it's peekaboo all over the place if we want to look, you know. And it's hard to really look at it because so many die for this. All right? We do
and
it every
I
day.
I agree with you with mostly everything that you said. And once again, this goes back to the mindsets we need to change, the mindset of contentment or sitting up there looking at, you know, something that's a piece of tin foil, and from afar it looks like a shiny diamond. We have to get to the point of understanding that it is what you think it is. Okay, it's free lunch, free programs, all of these things. Yes, and in the minute that you get that in place, then they have another hoop that you got to get with. Nope, you can only get it from this time to this time. If you're talking free lunch in the summer, what kid is going to get up at the same time they would have gotten up during September to June?
Right.
This is the time when they're going to relax and do whatever it is that they can do.
Now, you know, their system has full regulation over these things, right? Right now.
But it's us.
Back then, it didn't.
It's us, though. Because that goes back to us being a forgiving and content people. We are content with the fact of anything that's more than us being in jail or being hit with a rock or it being lynched and thrown that. We're content with that. We feel like that's our prize, for example. You know, as long as they're not doing that, as long as we can go to a cop, try again. Can we really? Legal systems and finances need to be there. Real protection needs to be there. Real unity needs to be there. Digression is not an option. Digress from the falsehoods that you get. And you know why that old man wanted to fight you in the bus? Because he may not know there are more people in college than in our race than there are in jail. Why? Because what the hell does the white media show? They're not showing that. You see what we spoke about this article before. The black college graduate mom breastfeeding her daughter at the ceremony. That was a picture of disgust for these people. That's the way they presented it. That was okay. They totally overlooked the cap and gown. They totally overlooked that white people put into place that breastfeeding is the best, most beneficial way for you to give your child a good start in life. But because I guess it came from a dark-skinned breast, there was a problem. And we sit right back there, and we have, like I say quite often, a roundtable social media activist conversation, and then it's over. None of us sit there and go after those people for printing such a story. None of us are outraged about the fact that every damn satirical article that comes out has a black person being in some shameful state as the butt of their damn joke.
And that's all
Not
the time.
Nobody is arguing the fact that Michael Vick has been dehumanized in every aspect. And it's not like I was ever a Michael Vick fan or not a Michael Vick fan. But the point is, the man is a human being. For whatever atrocity that he did by their standards, he paid the damn price over and over again, and he's continuing to pay it. Even prisoners that get released get a pardon. Where is our outrage on that? That's the other mindset that we don't have.
Right.
We don't have the mindset to be angry and preserve ourselves.
And if we don't have it, how can we pass it down to the children? So if the children don't have it generationally, then it's lost. How dare we do such a thing? That's crazy. You know, it's like a wet foot, dry foot. Now you know how they go. Like, okay. I've overheard that if you make it into this country, right, but you could even be from Cuba and be a refugee, they'll let you in. But if you're Haitian, they send you back because you're black. I've heard.
You know.
Now, they won't even let your feet get dry by the time they send you back.
Right. We're too busy being internal spies for the other half. We're too busy looking for our way to sit at the corporate door, which they'll never let you in, and wait for them to come out after their nice briefcase packed big powerhouse for us to go, if you let us in, I'll give you something you really want to know, how to take us down.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, sir.
Well, you know, Professor had made a point about something as far as our people in our communities, that we need to really start paying attention to what's going around, what's going on around us in our surroundings and our communities. Because I give you a perfect example. Here in Toledo, Ohio, we've been dealing with this tax credit problem with these homes. Now, when these homes started going down and they started getting boarded up and then people were vandalizing them, you know, I checked into a situation to find out, well, what could I do to go get a loan and possibly purchase one of these homes and fix it up you know, and rent it out for myself. They told me I couldn't do that because the federal government, these were tax credit homes, and it was federally governed programs that you can just outright purchase it, that you had to live in it for 15 years. I said, well, that don't make sense. I said, you got these, you have these houses that are sitting and boarding up that are an eyesore to the community. I'm willing to purchase one or two of them and redo them on my own with no cost to the government, myself. They tell me I can't do that. But now 6 to 7 months later, I see someone driving through my community. I don't know if they're from Sri Lanka or India or whatever, but I know they don't have an old state of Ohio license plate. They have a Florida license plate, and they're telling me that they're the new owners of these homes that are right here in my community and purchased the one next to me. You know, and I can't understand that. And why aren't our people being cautious and being watchful of what goes on in their own community? They tell you that we can't purchase the homes, but you sell it to somebody that don't even they can barely speak our language, but you let them come into our community and buy the property and then sell it back to our people, and they've got signs in the windows already that they're willing to accept housing vouchers, where they're going to charge the people $800 a month to live in these houses and allow the Section 8 folks to move in it. And the same money that should be in the community is going out of this state to a whole different state, possibly a different country. You know, I mean, how much longer do we sit back and accept stuff like that going on in our own communities?
And, you know, the irony about that, is I read an article, and I spoke about an article about 6 months ago. And when we're talking about the article, it was an article that was written in October of 2013 about the climate of gentrification here in Philadelphia. And there are politicians that are using that word as if it's something positive. You know, we're using gentrification to fix up the communities and so forth. And people who don't understand the word think that it's a good thing, and they just go along and get along. And basically your politicians are selling us out by creating secret and private auctions where they're auctioning off whole blocks. So they're sealing up these properties. They're not putting them on public display, so you don't know if they're for sale or not. And what they're doing is they're placing them to the highest bidder in private auctions, and they're allowing people to come in and buy up entire city blocks. I knew about what was going on because this happened in Detroit, and they were bringing a program here. So I'm not surprised that it happened in Toledo.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, Deacon, speaking on that, and I'm going to bring our next panelist in just a second. You know what? Let me do that now, and then I'll continue on. Hang on, fellas.
Okay.
Welcome to the show, Cole. You on the air?
Yeah. Sorry.
Well, I was waiting for the machine gun. Did your oil roll it up? All right. To reach anyone just a bit, let me just finish this out, and I'll go right to you. Professor, and Patrick and I also speak about this often, but I did a whole segment on the tax credit home fraud that's going on out in Deacon's area, okay? Something that is directly affecting not just Deacon, but the people around them, where there was some changing of hands with the mortgage companies, and the people who have been spending all this time putting this money in following the protocol of the benefit of this program was being told that they were going to be into foreclosure, because when the new mortgage company took over, the old mortgage company didn't turn over the funds or the records or whatever the case was. So
right.
The new company has no record of any of these homeowners paying any money toward the homeownership, which, first of all, if you really, you know, think about it, common sense would tell you these people clearly wasn't in these homes for more than 10 years without having paid something. So somebody needed to get some fire lit under their asses, you know. Nobody did, okay? So meanwhile, instead of going to the elephant in the room, they went to the people around it, as we speak about often. Now, the other thing that took place is our people, we'll talk about it, and talk about it in areas that seem to be safe, such as the big community yard of social media. And I love coming on social media because I think it's our biggest downfall when it could be our greatest uplift. Now, We posted a question. This question was posted. You guys know my style, pre-broadcast discussion question. Out of 42 sites or scenes that was up there, I've got 3 responses when it came down to asking for solution. 3 responses. We will talk about this if it was an article that came up from people, I guess, we don't know, or celebrities we do know. But where is the actual voice when it comes down? Social media should be a voice that leads to action. They know this. That's what they do. I wouldn't be surprised if right now, between internal trolls and those that already own the role, already making up a new page with some secret society, ready to come talk about the troublemaking bitch that's on the Edge show. Okay? Now, I can tell you that right now. And before this broadcast ends, there'll be about 4,500 likes from their people. Hello, Black America. We are stuck at a traffic light, looking at it go from green to red, waiting for a specific shade of green before we move our damn vehicles. It's only one green, one yellow, and one red. We have got to do better. We have got to do better. What are we doing? We're having children for murder, for the slaughter. We're having our kids go to school so they can come back less educated than they went out. I don't understand. What are we waiting for? How many people have to get up and show you statistics, show you more political crap? How many more white people have to come on here and say that they don't like us? How many more of our confused black brothers have to come on talking about it ain't racism when they call you a nigga, it's racism if they ask you about a disability on a job interview? How many more of our women have to become white people's whores on the side while their white wives gain the privilege and we give up the sex? How many more? How far down the line do our men have to sag their damn pants before they grow up? How many more of them are going to be on the front page so that all of our real briefcase-toting brothers don't get any more play? How many more of our bad guys have to be on the front page so that all of the good guys have to get a show on this segment to prove that they really are good guys? Why does every black mother out there have to be listed as a statistically single person when there's clearly a lot of two-parent homes thriving and flourishing and trying to beat the odds that's given to us? The mindset has to change, people. Yeah. How to reach you up, honey?
Yes. And that was 3 things of what we can do as far as solutions, right?
Yes, the 3 priorities that you feel we need to address towards solutions.
Mm-hmm. I think it was something that I was taught at a very early age, and it was that we have to accept our own, you know, do for self and be ourselves. And that's been a hard thing for us to do since we've been so taken away from the knowledge of self. It's been a very hard task, you know, although we've made strides. But when you accept your own, I remember also something that's saying that you're only as strong as your weakest link. And that's a problem with a lot of us who have certain strength. We're not willing to reach back, whether it's financial strength, whether it's, if it's other types of strength that we have as far as, you know, school knowledge, going to college and stuff like that. You know, we have those who are helping, but it's not enough. And therefore, that leads you to not really accepting your own. Just like how a lot of people say, people that know, they'll say, well, you know, and Malcolm was very good at expressing this, is that he said the bourgeois element of our communities, you know, are those who say they made it as far as financial strides and stuff. When they moved out, they never reached back. You know, and that was a big part of what happened in a lot of these communities that even had, from me speaking to people that were open and things like that. They said, yeah, we had all these different stores around here and blah, blah. They said, but once integration and all that stuff came, you know, so many years after, people start moving away, start going to the nicer areas where the white folks was at and all this and that. So then all of a sudden you see other people taking this place, the Koreans, the West Indians, you know, and different nationalities like that. So that's a part of accepting, you know, yourself. You have to embrace yourself. And a lot of us have gotten away from embracing each other as what our professor said earlier on the other show, as brothers and sisters. Because brothers and sisters are always going to want to look out for the best of each other who truly are sincere about one another. And then we have to, at the same time, all of that ties in, you have to do for yourself. And if we out here looking for and telling our children in these trying times, in these perilous times that we are living in, which our system itself has shown us that it doesn't truly care about us. They give us enough to go on, just like the programs you were talking about. People who get SSI, people who get welfare, you're getting just enough to meet your bare essentials. And it's designed that way. And within all that, we have a crisis as far as even into this day, many of us have an identity crisis. So that makes it hard for you to be yourself. If you don't understand your culture and your ways that you're supposed to think, do things, because those who understand their culture, they act on it together. If you see Jamaicans, when they come here, you know, and I've had been blessed with seeing different nationalities of black folks and Puerto Ricans and Mexicans, you know, that I've been cool with over the years. And you see how they operate. They basically operate as one. They may have their little brushes with one another and stuff like that, but when it comes down to it, they're going to do what they have to for each other. And until we can get those things down, accepting our own and being ourselves and doing for self, then we will be, you know, we'll be opposed to ourselves. And that's why a lot of this is happening. That's why we see a lot of our children out here slaying each other in the streets, and why we getting slayed by others, because we have to embrace ourselves. We have to accept ourselves, no matter if the kids out here, we can't, those of us who are too cowards to go out here and be able to speak to the children and teach them if they can. Oh, they're unteachable. And listen, a lot of this comes from our own as well as those who want us to be in this place. But until we get the heart and the courage to go out here and build, that's the only way things will happen. And really, that's the only solution, is for us to do for self nowadays. Because anyone else who act like they were going to do something to help us, most of the time we got shafted. These civil rights programs, even, certain things came through, but guess what? A lot of other people benefited more than us from it. And that's a sad thing. You know, everything we fight for and strive for, when we include everyone but ourselves, we get left by ourselves. So since we get left by ourselves, it'll be befitting that we learn from the things that happened to us in the past, that people who came in smiling at us and all that stuff, making like they was down with us for the cause and all that stuff like that. We got to get tired of people coming in and stealing our joy and stealing things that we should be entitled to by nature itself. And until we can do that, you know, the solutions, we'll just always be talking about the solution. And I just wish for us to come on up, because it's time.
Well, I believe that Professor said something pretty important, and I don't know if it was on this show or was it the other one, but those that are confused, we don't deal with them at this moment. We just pretty much deal for them. And when we get them together, we'll deal with it. We will deal with it.
Hello.
Yes.
Are you guys hearing me?
Well, yeah, you were coming in and out with me over here on this end, but I can hear you good now.
All right, better now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It sounded like I had a little bit of a cut glitch or something. Okay. Well, as I was saying, definitely we definitely not going to be able to appeal to a mass of people right at this moment. I have alluded before as we are in a broken state. We are in a broken state. We are pretty much, think about it like the aftermath of a nuclear attack at this moment. And what we really need to do is focus on the pieces that we still have together and put them together. Dealing for those people who don't understand, who truly believe that as long as we're not being hung on trees in public execution with the government standing behind the mob, we're fine. As long as we can afford certain, as long as we can afford certain gear, apparel, bling, we're good. Life isn't so bad. As long as we can get some high adjustable rate mortgage on a piece of home, we're good. We're good. We need to start looking at the little things. We need to start, you know, when I alluded to real estate, the first thing that people had said in a private group that I actually surveyed from was housing. Now, yeah, I mean, you know, housing definitely is important, but real estate is not just that. Real estate is land. Real estate is taking a building that needs to be gutted. And you know what? That's going to cost money. But guess what? What about those brothers that are good with their hands? What about those licensed contractors that are not getting the big booming business that they're looking for right off the bat? How about we all take a craft that we're good at and bring it to the table and start doing what we can do for each one project?
Mm-hmm.
How about we do that? How about each one teach one, each one loan one, each one serve one? You know, I spoke on the anniversary show about how this show came together. From four people standing together in heartbreak, poor, have nothing, don't have a way to go, nothing about broadcasting. But each one of us found a connection with somebody who was in each field we needed, and those people cared enough to remember where they came from and tried to give us a heads up. That's what you call support and networking, and that's what other ethnic groups do. We've got too many people. I'm not even worried about the senior citizens at this moment. They've already been there, done that, and until they see it, as long as they're alive, they're not going to understand anything but what's in their bowl. This is the bone I'm chewing on. Don't try to take it from me. You could tell me that there's a milk-flavored, beef-flavored, you know, all buffet-flavored bone. This is the one I have, and I'm not letting it go. The next one after that got the dark-colored glasses on. Nope, it's like this. That's it. I don't want to hear it. But they'll peek over every so often. Now we're dealing with a generation that dropped the ball and is raising a generation that's all over the place. And since we're too worried about what we haven't done, we're too busy pointing the fingers just the way they do at our own. Our children desensitized from their parents. Our parents desensitized from being parents. That's where we're at. That's what we have to deal with. Now that you know all the things that we have heard, all the things that we have recognized, all the things that we have realized, put them on paper and deal with them and know that this is what it is. These are the things we cannot change. These are the things we can. These are the things that we're never going to get around, so we're never going to get through. So how do we get around them? These are the things that we need, and these are the things that we'll never get. And these are the things that we'll need and never get. Now that we've finished noticing all that, the time for talk is over. What are you going to do about it? And for those of you that was so smart and sarcastically inboxing me in my other inbox, asking me what am I doing about it, I hope that the long list of things that I sent back to you with proof and everything was enough for you to keep your mouth shut. Not only what I'm doing, but what I plan to do and what I'm continuously doing. Because I can't point fingers and four pointing back at me.
Mm-hmm. What are they doing?
Oh, wait a minute. I think the professor dropped and came back on. Oops, hold on. Hey, birthday boy, you with us? I'm sorry. I didn't realize you weren't on. I'm so sorry.
I was on, but I got disconnected, and I called back in, and you guys were on the roll, you know, so I was sitting here stuffing my face.
It better be birthday cake.
No, no, well, it's birthday grilled turkey thighs.
All right.
And,
there you go. That's what we're talking about. At least you were born in a hot month. I was born in the Halloween month, so it's cold. there's no, well, with the exception of our other little pistol cat, Mr. Patrick, I can't be in a more powerful group of people than I have right now. And we're also missing our twin Spitfires. They've been going through a little something lately, so they're kind of unavailable at the moment. But, and then Erica's down, which, Erica, I hope you and your baby feel better. But, and Terry, I think that was our other new caller who had some great things to say. These are people that are, that this doesn't apply to. Okay, so we have plenty of them. And, J-Lo, you've alluded to, like I said, you have people that will argue you down about you telling them something positive about the mm-hmm. race they belong to. That's ignorance. That's preconditioned sadness. I'm sorry, Professor, I'm going to definitely say this point and give you the mic. You know, I spoke to you guys and other listeners about being a victim of abuse. One of the things that come with the mindset of a victim is that as much as you hate the situation that you're in, as much as people hand you the keys to your own escape, you're not used to anything but what you know. And as much as you love what you see out there, you don't trust what's out there because it's the unknown. It's a change. It's a brand new start, but what would you do then? All you've ever been trained to do is to brush up and sharpen up your defense for what's coming next, be it a verbal blow or a sexual blow or a physical blow. That's what you know. We are in that state right now. We are Stockholm Syndrome victims. We are hostages by our own choice. We are choosing to be in fear. We are choosing to sit back and give whatever it is that they're out there with. And what gets me is a lot of these people, as I mentioned before, nothing turns my stomach more than to see people who are actually not celebrities and not hip-hop media moguls that are actually doing a little more than average in the community and will take from the community and not share the wisdom. That we are sitting right back watching all these ethnic groups come right here. Deacon, you say it often. I just heard Stalo say it. I heard Altariq say it. All these ethnic groups come in, converting their currency into our currency, coming into neighborhoods that need it, but they don't give anything back to the communities that's there. And you know what? They do it with horrible customer service, too.
Yes, they do.
I just went to a concert with my daughter and her friend. Okay, came back, it's about 1:00 in the morning now, we're waiting on this long bus that takes forever, I don't know if it's coming from the damn Sahara Desert or what, but it definitely took that long to get there. So we had enough time to go into a Dunkin' Donuts in a crowded, everybody out after the concert waiting on the same bus, I guess. And here are these two Middle Eastern workers. Now, first of all, bad business is this. You cannot be in a prime area of an event arena or a big place and not staff your restaurants or your facility to accommodate the excess crowd that's surely going to be there at a certain time, be it going in before the event or coming out after the event. You're supposed to anticipate, if you truly want to serve your community at the best, to be ready to serve their needs. Now, this person had one cashier at the Dunkin' Donuts restaurant and one sandwich maker, okay? How in the hell are you going to manage a crowd of a concert? After the concert, when now all the expensive concession food is out of your system, you are post-drunk if you drink, you are post-high if you smoke, and you have the munchies and you need to eat. And everybody is waiting there to eat and use the bathroom. How do you have one person there? Now, this particular person didn't even smile when he was greeting the people. Then he was trying to take more than one order without completing the first order. Then he was in the middle of trying to do two orders, didn't complete one. The first person wasn't even done ordering. He's taking the next order. And then one of the ethnic groups who believe they're bigger than our group was sitting up there watching me get frustrated with the fact that I'm busy trying to give him a large order. I got two items out the way, which he got wrong after swearing to God he got it. Gave me a look, and she had the nerve to ask me, is there a problem? I said, there sure is, and there should be one with you too. And what gets me is that you're going to drop a bomb and then don't want to be there for the fire. I think you need to keep your mouth shut. But he had no smile. He had no courtesy. They were not even worried about how long they were taking. They weren't upset with the fact that there were at least 100 people standing on that line, upset with the fact that, A, it was taking too long. B, when they finally got there, he was too busy trying to comply with another person. And he was doing it with an attitude. And we accept this. I can't allude to the 24-hour deli, which is really a 12-hour deli until midnight, and then it's a window shop, like literally. And we're busy running there at 12 o'clock, not for an emergency, but because we've got the munchies and we don't mind standing in the bitter cold, the pouring rain, the snow, the bitter heat, to shop with these people. Looking past him and whatever other things are there to try to imagine what's in aisle two. Go ahead, Professor. Oh, wait, there's a panelist. Let me just bring him in.
Okay.
Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Am I back?
You're already back out, Tariq. I'm talking to the 252. All right. Okay, Professor, go ahead.
You know, it's to the point where it's easy to get frustrated, and we need to really look at what it is that's propelling us to remain in a childlike state when it comes to our mental approach to addressing the situation. And, you know, part of it is cognitive dissonance. We've been taught all our lives, you know, for generations that it's a bad thing to upset white folk. So, you know, we generally speaking, we've been taught to be overly obedient to the dominant culture and so forth. Now, when we address it, though, it's really time for us to just man up and to become the shepherds of our community. You know, there's an underlying fear of addressing the system and addressing the people within the system, and it's to the point where people are intimidated by name calling anymore. So people don't want to make it. People don't in our community are afraid to be labeled as race baiters or reverse racists or whatever crap they pull out their pockets. You know, I saw something in Patrick's group earlier where they were talking about. Now the Tea Party wants to rename the Cracker Jack box because they find it offensive. I apologize. This car that has literally four cylinders is sounding like this.
Get on board, birthday boy. V6 engine or more.
Right. So they, you know, we continue to find different ways to just deny being accountable. So it's just like on the plantation. It was easier for us to go yes sir, boss, and play dumb and party. And I'm not saying that the plantation was fun to party, but what I'm saying is, you know, it was fun to sneak out and party instead of being responsible. So you did have slaves who would find ways to get out and have a party on the plantation when the plantation owner left the house or whatever, or if, you know, they would find different places in the woods and different shacks, and they would party. Well, there were other brothers and sisters planning and plotting their escapes, you know, planning and plotting to overthrow the plantation and so forth. But instead of helping and assisting in that matter, you did have people trying to avoid it. And that same mentality is current today, where, and it's even more so because it's nowadays developed coping rituals to deal with white supremacy. Coping rituals. Like, it's going to happen anyway, so let's just find a way to ease, to deal with it in the easier fashion. And what boggles my mind is the fact that people are, their children are getting killed out here, you know, and the first thing we do is we start saying, you know, we are our own worst enemy. That's not true. But Patrick said it best the other day, and I've been saying it for a while now. You know, we look at ourselves through the lens of white supremacy. So they hate us, just like Joe said, they hate us. No question about it, they hate us. And then we hate us. You know, now he was wrong when he said black people hate white folks. He was wrong about that. 95%, and I'm probably being less than generous with that number, 95% of black America were wiped their behind with the off the bloodstained shirt of Africa if white Americans said, okay, guys, we're going to let y'all all in. You know, we're going to offer you the same privileges that we have. And all you have to do is wipe your behind with the blood, a blood-soaked sheet of an African, and they'd be going around killing each other just for that privilege. So we have to find a way to get to the youth who have rebelled against everything and show them the true purpose in life, and their true purpose in life is to be the lead and take the lead in this liberation movement.
You're absolutely right, and I'm going to say a little more, too. 99% of us don't even want to be bothered with white people if we got a little bit of our own. You know, they're so afraid that if we get up there, we're going to come storming the frontier to come and get theirs. And it's like we have spoken about this before, and I'll go back to that Cracker Jack situation because I believe that was on the group today. They are offended by the Cracker Jack word. And that's because the only thing that we say is one of two things, that we say either honky or we say cracker. That's what I heard growing up anyway. Well, now let's take a look. We've been called monkey, spook, ghost, mook, coon. I'm sorry, how many animals did I name so far?
Okay.
Yeah, spook, that's a ghost. What else have we been called? Monkeys, animal. We've been called dogs. We've been called slime. We've been compared to filth and all sorts of lab experiments, fungus. We've been called everything. And they're offended by something that compares them to a food or a sound?
No, it's a tic-tac thing, and it's just the petty nature of the white
community.
Yeah,
they're running out of things. They're running out of things to make atrocious or to be the big shock and scare to their community. They're running out because guess what? As we got older, all the perceived fears of us have not really been proven. Why? Because they're starting to see that their own cops are shooting us down before anything ever really happened. Now, even though they'll stay in their corner, they'll whisper it among themselves and not really fight against it, but they're seeing it. So what's happening now? White media needs to come up with something more spooky and scary.
Well, even so, and you mentioned something that's really important. They focus on fear. They focus on fear. And it is fear that fuels and drives their engine. And two, I don't understand how we can't just continue. I mean, it's like the old bully syndrome. When you went to school, if there was a bully and a bully had his eyes on you, you know, then that bully was on top of you until you gave him a reason to leave you alone. We haven't given this bully a reason to, you know, a reason to leave us alone. So this bully is on top of us, and the fear is building and building and building. And it gets to the point, like, what are you going to do? Some people respond to fear with self-defense and give it their all, and they attack their attacker, and they drive them off of them. But some people panic and die from fear. So which is it going to be for us? Because as a community, we can't continue to sit around. I mean, what aren't we afraid of? We're afraid of them. We're afraid of ourselves. You know, we're afraid of our shadow. We're afraid of the government. We're afraid everywhere you turn around, somebody's afraid. Only thing we're not afraid of is killing each other.
Yes.
That's the only time we get brave.
Oh, Jesus. Yes, yes, yes. We have not, that is, does that not go back to deflecting? We are so afraid to attack the beast coming at us that we will go after what is comfortable to us. The loved ones that no matter what we do, they'll always have our back. So they're easy to beat up on because all we got to do is come back with an apology or something. That's what most abusers do. And you know what? They're too afraid to come storming forward. So if they're not just outright blowing off our heads, okay, they got to make us turn on each other because then that makes us easier to conquer. And we've got plenty of people still around going, yes, sir, master, I'll look right inside and see what it is. You might want to know that slave number 465 is about to make an escape. Yes, sir, boss.
And that was good for one chicken dinner.
Yeah, after they've eaten it and given you a little bit of what was left on the bones. One thing Malcolm X did say was we tend to have, back in the slavery days, they had a lot of the collective mentality. If the master said, we need to get a new house, yes, sir, boss, we sure do. Mm-hmm. How different is that today? So let me speak to white America straight up. We're big, but we're harmless. We're powerful, but we don't want your stuff. You can do whatever it is you want to do. Just leave us alone. We're entitled to have our families like you're entitled to have your families. We don't want what you have. We want to build our own. And we want to stay off on our own little remote island, away from you. You can keep your boats in your little docks and stop sailing over to try to figure out what it is we're doing in the trees and sands of Africa. We're loud, but we're harmless. We like loud music, but we will never kill anybody. Now, let's see. Rock music promotes animal culture, chopping off snake heads, banging your head, razor cuts, chewing people out on stage.
Don't forget Satanism.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Satanism, New World Order, Old World Order. Let's talk about killing the police. Let's talk about coming to America and bombing everything. Let's talk about finding a kook and killing a spike and doing all this stuff. And guess what? Your kids do it. There hasn't been one black kid in the state of America that went out there and shot somebody because Biggie told them to do so. Don't like those statistics? Take a real good look before you start cleaning up the print in the printing room. Your kids truly get drunk and start going, yeah, white snake said we could do that. Let's go out there and drag a guy to his death because he's dark. What is so hateful? What is so hateful? And how could you hate something that you keep trying to steal and replicate? You don't like our big butt? Stop getting the Brazilian booty lift. You don't like the color of our skin? Stop burning yourself in the tanning salon. Our music is too loud. Stop sending your white artists out there to be a hip-hop artists.
They love everything about us, but they can't be us. And that's
they
the
know
whole...
everything about us because we sit out there and give ourselves public displays to be looked at. They don't even have to come into your homes and spy with a little telescope. They're busy right there watching you in the parks, on the corners, in the fields, over there in the traffic stops, getting loud and acting silly. You loud, you doing whatever. They can see what you look like as a really snotty McDonald's worker.
Well,
you can assume we're uneducated and silly and have no ethics and like, oof. Why? Because we keep feeling that the louder we are, the more powerful we look.
You know, they, the irony is, and I think it really eats at the core of a lot of members of the white community.
Right.
They really envy us. Because of our creativity, because of our rhythm, because of our natural relationship with nature, because of our ability to maintain not only persevere but succeed in it. You know, I mean, we really talk harsh about what our condition, our community is, but when you really think about it, Look at the consistent bombardment that we've dealt with for the last 500 years to be socially conditioned this way, yet and still we still find ways to thrive, like the rose who grew through the concrete, you know, sidewalk or whatever, that rose that grew through the crack in the sidewalk. We are able to still find ways to break through and so forth. And that perpetuates a fear that we can't understand, because we talk about fear and they try to instill fear in us. But make no mistake about it, the true people who are sitting there back in fear are these members of these communities that, excuse me, continue to come forth in our communities and cause disruption. What is promoting this? What is propelling them or prompting them to come into our communities if there's not fear? Fear of what? Oh, they're over there building something. Let's tear it apart. Why would you tear something apart unless you fear what it was about to become?
Well, Patrick alluded to something on one of our previous segments, and there is a caller coming in. Let me just say this, and I'll bring them in. Patrick alluded to something that really was like a great analogy. He said, if you know you spent your time being a bully to other people all the time, that all you do is bully, 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 you're constantly going to be twice as paranoid that somebody eventually is going to bully you.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to trip over yourself to try to stay a bully. And I understand that mentality well. And as far as us always being able to make something happen, even when nothing is in our presence, I allude back to my rock soup stories. Give us a pot. Give us a flame. Put a little bit of salt and pepper on the side. Give us a rock, and we'll find a way to make it a meal. So let me bring in our panelists, because there's not much time left. So hang on. Welcome to the show, Cole. You on the air?
Can you hear me?
Yes, Patrick. Welcome.
Yeah. I called there earlier, but you guys couldn't hear me, so.
Yeah, I was like, hello?
Yeah.
All right. Three things that you feel our community needs to immediately tackle in order for us to get on the road to recovery, rejuvenation, whatever it is, and three mindsets you think that we need to eliminate in order for us to get to those three priorities.
Okay, well, three things we need to tackle. I guess it's pretty big, but we can narrow it down. I understand I don't have much time, but I would say I got to start with economics, and to go even deeper into economics, I got to say business. And not necessarily saying we need more black businesses, that's not to say we don't, we do, but we need the right kinds of people opening these businesses, the people with the correct mentality to help black people, and we need them opening businesses in the correct sectors. I posted something on social media some time ago. It was a breakdown of all of the sectors of the economy that black people were involved in, and all of the sectors that have anything to do with nation building or acquiring wealth from the land and transferring those resources from the land into products and services, raw materials, black people were not engaged in. When we talk about mining, there aren't enough black mining companies for them to even be able to report the numbers. So as far as mining goes, we're at a 0.0%. You know, when you start talking about construction, we're not doing too great. When you start talking about anything that involves raw material, black people in America are not engaged in, and that's where you accumulate wealth at. When you start talking about getting natural resources from the ground and transferring them into something else. So we have to do that. When you start talking about another thing we need to take care of is we need to take care of education. It's been proven at this point that children that have a sense of racial pride do better in school. They've done two or three studies on this at this point recently, not to mention all the studies they've done in the past on it. Children that feel a sense of pride about who they are and where they come from do better in school. So when you tie that into all of the other things going on in the black community, a lot of the things Professor talks about, a lot of things that a lot of you guys talk about And then you tie that in to the fact that our children don't feel proud to be black. Then it begins to paint a total picture of what's going on when we start talking about educationally. And even to that point, black people have resources. We just don't have when we think of resources, we think of resources from a European state of thinking about resources. We tend to only think about money, and money is a representation of resources. Money itself
Absolutely.
Is not a resource, because if, say, me and Professor are doing a deal, and I want to give him $20,000 for the deal, but he don't want my $20,000, then my paper is just paper at that point. It becomes worthless. It serves no use. If two people cannot agree upon the value of a dollar, then the dollar has no value. And so we have to understand that about money. And another thing we have to understand about money is when you start rolling in those higher circles, those higher income brackets, they don't really deal in money like that. You know, they deal a lot in the barter system. So we have to get away from this concept of the only resource out there is money. And we have to start thinking about the way we network with each other. Listen, if I need someone to do something for me, the only time I have to pay is when I don't know anybody that can do it for me, just off the strength of the relationship I have with them. So if I need somebody to create an advertisement campaign for me, I only have to pay if I don't have a friend that can create an advertisement campaign for me based off the strength of our relationship or based off some mutually beneficial thing that I can do for him. The problem with the way black people network, and one thing we have to, especially in business circles, we have to understand what networking is, and we have to understand where our strong suits lie. We have an amazing amount of intellectual capital. You go into the hood, and you can find a level of brilliance in the hood that is unmatched and unparalleled virtually anywhere else in the country. The problem is, it's not focused on building up the environment around itself. It's focused on achieving more monetary gain. And the problem with that is, like we just discussed, money doesn't have any intrinsic value. So it's basically wasting itself away trying to get something that's not going to satisfy any of the desires that it's looking to be fulfilled by achieving the thing that it's trying to get. So we have to change the way we network amongst ourselves.
Patrick? Okay.
Did you guys lose me?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. This tag on Bluetooth.
I was about to say, you've been talking for 6 minutes, and I haven't heard so many targets get hit than you just said. Now, I don't know. I think you and Al Tariq and Professor, y'all be on the same shooting range or something. But let me say this to you. I was just thinking about something with regards to a business, and we often speak about black-owned businesses and how we don't, as a people, support them. Does anybody remember Famous Amos?
Mm-hmm.
The cookies, right?
Yep.
Now, frankly, I love the taste of those cookies. Okay? But I find so many people alluding to the Nestle, the Oreo, the Nabisco's, you know, and finding something wrong with it. And one of the things that I remember hearing a black person say in a supermarket, that if I was able to at the time, but I was pregnant, I would have picked up my entire shopping cart and, you know, like shook them in it. He was like, what do black people know about cookies anyway?
What?
Yeah, that's what I said at first. Are you kidding me? If there's anything black people know how to do, it's cook. If we don't know a damn thing else, we know how to cook. We could kill a buffalo with our bare hands and find a way to make it a stew, a casserole, a pot pie. Are you kidding me? Now, the problem is that they have all of these white picket fence apple pie visions with a white grandmother in an apron with her spotty little kids, you know, all freckle faced and cleaned up and smiling and sparkly blue eyes, and that's what they associated good baking with.
Mm.
Now, here's the other thing, very, 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 very interesting story about Mr. Amos. I remember reading this story, and I forgot what product or service that it was, that they were celebrating 15-year-old little Nikki, who was going around helping people with, I forgot what it was, a delivery service or something. They celebrated little Nikki, talking about how little Nikki just hustled, and he put all his pennies and change in a big old cookie jar, and he left it in there, and for months on end, and now he's one of the big top entrepreneurs and the youngest in his age and everything. Did anybody happen to, when they're eating famous Amos cookies, read Amos' story short in paragraphs as it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This man has an amazing story with an amazing product.
Yep.
And I don't know about any of you, but I kind of don't see famous Amos cookies around anymore. Do you?
Yeah, they're still there, but
yeah, he's still around.
Ben sold that. You know that, right?
They did what?
Sold him.
He sold his cookie business.
What happened to him is
he had gotten into an issue with the distribution company, and they robbed him of the rights to continue to make the cookies because they shafted him in the deal. So it was just like a sharecropper deal where he wasn't educated about the economics of and business law, so they pretty much found a way to steal his company from him. Now he's working out on Hawaii, and he has a cookie called the Kahuna Cookie. And that's his new cookie out there because he can't even use his name.
Right.
Okay. He can't even use his picture.
I see you there. I'm going to bring you in just a minute. You see, that is the other aspect of our needs and mindsets, because I believe that it kind of crosses over. Now, some of us can get up there because I believe, I don't know which one of you power gentlemen was bringing up the big, beautiful numbers about the black-owned existing businesses right now, okay? However, one of the things that we failed to do is to learn all the semantics. For somebody to be able to take your damn name, your rightful, God-given government name, okay, in a deal, somebody to take that. First of all, the other thing I wanted to allude to with you, Patrick, was this. A lot of people do think about resources and finances as in a business deal as money. But people don't understand that our country was founded on a lot more than money, barter and trade. You can do something I can't do. I've got something you need. We can do this together. A lot of it was barter and trade, okay, where some was money and some was product. I believe that the Indians and Pilgrims, if you want to go by that history, sort of did that. Okay, so that's the other thing that we have to start teaching, where it's not just capital, it's value. You know, like I don't remember what the measurements were in comparison. Somebody posted, and I'm sure it was one of you guys that was in one of the groups, and I posted, like, you know, if you had $1 million lump sum, or I think 1,000 pennies or something like that, which one would you go for? And, of course, everybody jumped on what looked bigger. And everybody needs to understand that a lump sum doesn't repay itself. Okay? You could take a dollar and put it into something that's 50 cents and then make something else. And then that 50 cents becomes another dollar. Meanwhile, when you have something in your hand, you, as quickly as it comes, it can go. The idea is for you to take that and to put it into something that's going to keep paying you back. Let's bring in our new caller before we run out of time. Crossing my fingers. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, can you speak up just a little bit?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Just 504.
Okay. And how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. Okay, your take on tonight's topic?
I see you talking about business and basically racism in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Am I on air?
Yes. My questions are, what are three things you feel that the black community needs to address immediately in order for us to start getting better? And what are three mindsets you think we need to get rid of in order to make those three things happen?
Well, the black community has to totally separate themselves from the United States system. And they should definitely demand that if, you know, that they don't want to be part of the United States system. Because if you're trying to build a community working within a system that is not for blacks, never was and never will be, you won't be able to build a community.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, because the system and the odds are against the blacks, black community working underneath the United States system, they have special units just to keep black people oppressed in their communities, and they have these units for a long, long time. So what blacks have to do is demand their separation from the United States of America system.
Okay. You're absolutely correct on that. And so what do you think are the three mindsets that we need to get rid of?
Well, the first thing is thinking that they are accepted into white society, which is the imperialistic nature of the United States of America, because you're not accepted in the United States of America as a black person. Secondly, if you're working on something, you have to be working on the same goal as 40 million black people and not be scattered on certain different goals. So you have to work on one thing to get that one thing solved and done. And thirdly, you can't be a turncoat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, oh, my God, that's so important. Absolutely.
So
and
if...
Go ahead, Jeff.
So if you do a turncoat, then you're going to basically mess things up for the rest of blacks towards a goal. So first thing, blacks need to demand their separation from the United States of America system. Because the system has never worked for them, never was, and never will be for them. And just those things, and then you can start working towards community as a whole and building it, not underneath the United States system.
Absolutely.
Then you're working on an international level at that point, because now you're not underneath the hold of the United States.
You're absolutely right. Everything you said has been absolutely along the lines of what we hear on this channel, believe for sure. And definitely they're not for us. Everything that they actually offer with one hand, they're snatching your back with another one. So we definitely have to wake up as a people on that one. And that, by the way, welcome to our show, and I'm very happy that you called in, so I appreciate it. We definitely have to make ourselves independent. We have to cut whatever dependency strings that we have. We definitely have to stop being content with what little carrots they're offering, because every carrot we bite off has a string where they yank it back at will.
Well, the United States system is not working for white people today. You know it's definitely going to work for majority of black people, because it was set up not to work for black here. So blacks, the 40 million blacks, have to basically separate themselves from the United States system. system is definitely not for them.
Definitely isn't. And Professor, would you like to?
Reparations.
Yes.
That we did.
That's true. And now we have another person. You see, we have a lot of us that know and are saying something. And that's not what's being portrayed. And that's not what's being portrayed. There's a lot of us that understand a whole lot more than what's being projected. And we're sitting back and allowing that to happen. We're not looking, we're not using our own choices. We're not going a route that, you know, that we were actually given by people who actually fought the fight straight up. We know how to use it the same way our so-called success icons do. We know how to use the struggle to the benefit of some sort of popularity or showcasing, but not to progress, and that's a problem.
Well,
but you're absolutely right, 504.
The thing is that the people back then that fought for equal rights and all that, they fought for acceptance to be inside of the United States system, and that was the wrong route to go. You can't be accepted into a system that has brung majority of blacks here as a servitude to whites. So you can't say, we fight for rights. You fight for rights for a system to be accepted in a system that don't want you. It wasn't for you. It never will be. So blacks today just have to totally separate themselves from the United States system.
I agree with you, and I think today's civil rights fight should be about just allowing us to be and leave if we want, and allowing us to do without them. You're absolutely right.
Well,
absolutely right.
I think blacks need to they have to demand something almost like now with what the Native Americans have. You know, a sovereignty. You have to demand your sovereignty. You're not accepted. I mean, the system just ain't working for white folks today. So it's not going to just work for majority of blacks. It's just plain and simple. So majority of blacks have to just basically want to separate themselves from the United States of America.
And the only thing that I see that might be a problem with that is this. Let's say we get that. And like you said, their own system isn't working for them. And they have a natural nature to want to acquire, achieve, merge, and even when you are leaving them alone, even when you are doing certain things, even when you do have your own sovereignty, they're still going to find a way to get upset with that and try to invade. And that's the one issue that I see. And I think that's something that a lot of the world able-bodied people or able-minded people think of. But again, my thing is, you got to stand for something or die for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's it. And gentlemen, we are down to our last 2 minutes, so I have to sign off for tonight. But please, again, tomorrow, we have a African-American school that's going to be here, students in the fourth grade. They're going to be telling from their words and their minds and their writing pieces how they feel about bullying and how they want it to stop and what bullying does for them. Many of them are victims of bullying, and there's been times when things were desperate for them and didn't seem like anything was happening, and they decided to speak out. They will be here tomorrow, and I ask all of you here to please call in and support them. Okay, 504, welcome to the show. I hope you call in again. My power panelists, thank you all very much. Happy birthday, Professor Patrick. Thanks for completing the circle. Darlene and Arlene, if you're listening, we miss you. Erica, feel better. Every single one of you that have been out there bringing us to nearly 26,000 people right about now, I want to thank you all very much. So until tomorrow night at 8:30, everybody, be blessed, be a blessing, make a difference. Let's band together and let's fight this fight, you know, not literally in a sense where we want to stand out there and go fighting people, but enough for them to understand that we value ourselves. And we need to make a change. And if it means separating ourselves from this so-called freedom country for real freedom, then we have to make that choice because our kids are dying from it. So have a good night, everybody, and God bless.
Yep. Good night, everybody.
I say, fun people.
On the Edge, we'll talk about real issues.